And what we're going to speak about is I believe, one of the more important concepts leading up to Yom HaTzmaut. I know it's still Yom HaShoah by you guys, but the message is nonetheless very, very important. And the message is one that we've spoken about a number of times, and I think we're going to articulate it in a little bit of a different way this week. Even though these are the Rav Kook Shiurim, we're actually not going to see a piece in Rav Kook. I looked up and down for him to write specifically this concept, and I couldn't find an exact makor. However, I did speak to Rav Gantz, and Rav Gantz wrote a beautiful, beautiful article on this topic, and he said that this is Pasha, what Rav Kook thinks on this topic. We're in the Parshios of Tazria Mitzora. Tazria Mitzora, and we speak a lot about Tzaras, and it's interesting that in a number of places in Chazal, when speaking about Mashiach, they use the word Mitzora. And what we're going to deal with today is, why is that? Why is Mashiach considered a Mitzora? What is the connection between Mashiach and Tzaras? What is the connection between the Beis HaMikdash and Tzaras? First, I just want to I want to be mocked in with a piece in Rav Elchanan Wasserman, which we've seen a number of times. Speaking about Zionism, speaking about Rav Kook, and I found a funny little line over here from the Munkacher and the Satmar Rebbe speaking about this concept. So he says over here in the first line, "Me'alenu la'adgish u'la'achriz galui esdas torasenu hakdosha." We have to be clear and be outspoken about this, about what the Torah thinks. "B'chdei l'salekes bilbula musagim." That people shouldn't be confused. There's these Jews that seemingly are Shomrei Torah. They're speaking about this country and this returning to Eretz Yisrael as somewhat of the beginning of a process of Geula. Aleinu lohodia, says Rav Wasserman, we have to say, Lahem das Torah Seinu Akdosha, what the Torah really says about this. She'enzu ki mischalta digalus chadasha. It's not an ischalta de geula, it's the exact opposite. It's the beginning of a new gullus. What does Rav Wasserman mean by a new gullus? I think what he means is, for the first time, at least according to his opinion, the first time we're using the chefta of Eretz Yisrael to spread apikorsis, right? One of the main tainas of the Satmar and the Munkacher and a lot of the anti-Zionists were that You look at these Jews and look what they're spreading. They're not spreading Dvar Hashem. They're spreading a lot of things that are antithetical to Judaism. So it can't be that this is the beginning of the Geula. It's the beginning of a new Gullus, that we're even able to be in Gullus while we're in Eretz Yisrael. That's what Rav Wasserman says. Over here, I found a small idea over here in Gam B'Munkach. The Munkacher Rebbe was a very vapid anti-Zionist, and he says the following: "V'sham amru kasuv b'Torah b'parshas Tzitzis lo sasura achrei levavchem achrei neichem." We all know the pasuk. We say it three times a day, right? You shouldn't be sasur after your heart and after your eyes. So what is he? What's the pirush of that pasuk? Achrei levavchem ze herzel, right? What is herzel? That's the pshat in Achrei Levavchem is after Herzl, v'Achrei Nechem zeh Rav Kook. So Rav Kook and Herzl are in the same sort of category when speaking about, once again, following in the path of Rav Elchanan Wasserman and the vapid anti-Zionist. I bring this as just a hakdama to sort of show contrast as to the Torah that we're going to be seeing today. So there many more than the Makoros that I brought, but throughout Chazal we find that Mashiach is called a Mitzora, and the clearest one is in the Gemaras in Sanhedrin, Daf Tzadiches, says Mashmo, what is the name of Mashiach? So Chazal, they bring a number of different suggestions. Debe Rabbi Shila Amre Shilo Shmo, maybe his name is Shilo, Shinemar Ad Kievo Shilo, Rabbanan Amre Chiyura Debe Rebbe. And Rabbanan say, no, that his name is not Shiloh, his name is not that, it's not Ben David. It's the Mitzora of Beis Rebbe. Now, what does that mean? It's the Mitzora of Beis Rebbe. Right. So the Mefarshim have a number of different commentaries on this, and this is the Nakuda that we're going to speak about today. Why is it that Mashiach is called a Metzorah? Just the next source, just running through it very fast, we see that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, when he finds Eliyahu HaNavi, he's having a chavrus with Eliyahu HaNavi on the outsides of the cave of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, and he says, where is Mashiach? Right? Where is Emas Asay Mashiach? As Amar Le Zil Shaili Lidei, you should go and ask Mashiach yourself when he's coming. V'hecha Yosef, so Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, so where is he? Ipatche de Romi, he's standing on the outskirts of Rome. Umay Simne, and he says, so how am I going to recognize him? Yosef b'nei ani esov lechaloyim, he's sitting with the poor people and the people who have wounds and different afflictions, different tzarasses, different types of bodily wounds. So what is the significance of these Gemaras? What is the significance of these Gemaras? What does it mean that Mashiach is going to be a Metzorah? What does that mean for us? So there's a beautiful, beautiful, it's a number of chapters in Sefer Melachim. We're going to try to run through like a half a chapter in Sefer Melachim days, to try to give us some insight to what Chazal and where Chazal are getting this from. It's a beautiful, beautiful story, one of the less known stories in Sefer Melachim. So let's get started. So the background that you need to have is we're speaking about the times of Elisha in Malchus Yisrael. Malchus Yisrael is rampant with Avodah Zarah and terrible things. The kings are not only doing Avodah Zarah themselves, but they're forcing the Jews within their capital to serve Avodah Zarah as well. So it's a really, really bad situation. And Elisha is constantly going back and forth to the king and saying, you're doing something wrong, you're doing something wrong, you're doing something. So that's the background that you need. So one of the northern empires comes to Shomron, which we know Shomron today. Shomron was actually the capital of the of Malchus Yisrael at that time. So it says, Pasuk Kaf Dalet over here, Perek, Malachim Beis Perek Vav. We're going to run through it a little bit fast. Vayikvots ben Hadad melech Aram es kol machaneu. Right, Ben Hadad, this gen, the king of Aram, brings his entire army. Vayatzar al Shomron, and he comes and he lays a siege around Shomron. Vayi Rav gadol b'Shomron, v'nei tzarim alah dehiyos rosh chamor b'shmonim kesef v'ruv ha'akav divyonim b'chamisha kesef. The famine is rampant. It becomes so bad because when you have a siege, we know what the first thing that's to go is the water and the food. And if you have no food source, so it describes that the famine is so bad that the head of a donkey was 80 shkalim, which was a lot of money, and the poop of a dove was 5 shekels, whatever that means. Meaning there was mamish no food. And the king goes out to see what the matzav is, what is going on with his people. So he goes out walking on the wall. And one woman screams out to the king, save us. Look what we're going through. So the king responds, God should save you. Meaning, what is he saying? No one's going to save you. God's not going to save you. He's not coming. If God hasn't saved you, how am I going to help you at all? I mean, meaning, should I give you from the wine or should I give you from the wheat? There's no food. So he says to Ramach, Malach, Vatomer Aishazos. So he says, what's your problem? What are you crying about? What's your deal? It's not only that you're hungry, you're looking for something. So the woman says back to him, a crazy, crazy reality she describes him. So there's this hesken between two women. One woman says to the other woman, we're so hungry that today I'm going to kill my son and we're going to eat him. We're going to eat him together so we can survive. And then tomorrow, the esbenin ochal machar, and your son will... And that way we'll both be able to live another few days. So the woman says, my son went first. So we cooked my son, v'nochlena, and we ate him. What happened? Uh-oh, comes the second day. And the woman says, oh, I don't have a son. And so now we're hungry, and that's her problem. So there is no reaction of the king back to her, but he realizes that this is a terrible situation. He tears his clothing, recognizing that it's such a terrible situation. And the nation sees him. They see that there's total yeyush. We're speaking about a reality in which women are eating their own children, right? We're unable to see past it. Goes on and says the king, you know whose fault this is? It's always God's fault, or it's always the prophet's fault. So he says, Vayomer, ko yaseli Elohim v'cho yosifim yamod rosh Elisha ben Shafat alav hayom. Make sure that people know that by the end of the day, Elisha is going to be dead. And if not, then I'll die. Then I'll be done. Because Elisha is the source of all of these problems. Elisha overhears the king coming to come and kill him. And Elisha says to the messenger of the king the following in the next parak. Vayomer Elisha, Shimud var Adonai, listen to what God has to say to you. Ko amar Adonai ke'es machar, tomorrow. Right. Today we're in total poverty, totally, there's no hope. Says Elisha, tomorrow. Vayomer Adonai, Ke'is Machar says, Solus b'shekel esatayim sorim b'shekel hashar shomron. You're going to go out to the shuk tomorrow in Shomron, and you're going to see there's a vast amount of food. And if it was 80 shekels to buy a donkey's head, so it's going to be 1 shekel to buy a pound of flour. A total reality which the king can't think of. It's totally impossible. Vayan Hashalish, so the messenger says back to Elisha, Hashalamelch Mishal Yedo Esisha Elohim, Vayomer Hinei Adonai Osea Rubos Bashamayim. Even if God were to actually make windows from heaven, Hayah Davar, is this possible? Even if he makes windows from God, even if he brings down food from Shamayim. Elisha says, because you have a suffix in Hashem, you'll see it tomorrow, but you're not going to eat from it. Whatever that means. Let's continue. Continues this the story with these four mitzaraim, these four lepers. Where are the lepers? The lepers are always on the outside of the city because of the tumah of the tzaras. So they're outside, and there's a siege on the city. So they're thinking, we're not really in the best situation. So they say, right? If we just continue staying here, we're going to die. We don't have any food. If we try to go inside, if we go inside the city, we'll die because of the famine. And if we sit here, then we'll die as well. Let's just go to the Aramean place, and if they kill us, they kill us. And if they don't kill us, we have nothing to lose. They wake up early in the morning. Remember the siege. They wake up early in the morning. They get to the place, and no one's there. The entire place is empty. So miraculously overnight, Hashem did this unbelievable miracle that the Aramean army thought that the Israelis had brought allies, and they got so scared that they just totally abandoned their camp. No one's there. They left everything, right? They left everything. Their horses, their kelim, and their donkeys. They totally ran away. So what do these people do? They haven't eaten in such a long time. These lepers, they come, they're starting to just like pile it in, eating and drinking and taking these kelim in gold and silver. That's meanwhile, and they're starting to pile it in and hide it because they know that the other Jews are going to eventually find out. But then they say to themselves, oh my gosh, what are we doing? People are dying inside of the city and they don't know what's going on out here. This day is an unbelievable day of Geula for Am Yisrael. What are we doing? We're pounding ourselves. We're eating. Anyways, the story, without reading the rest of the story goes that eventually they go back to the king. They go back to the city, and the city, they don't believe them. They don't believe them. They still see the camp, but they don't see the soldiers. And the king says there's no possible way that they just totally left. This is for sure some sort of trap. They probably left a little bit, and as soon as we come out of the city, it's some sort of tactic. The king doesn't believe, the messengers don't believe, the people don't believe, and they're saying, hey, look at these four lepers. Like, maybe they're just tricking us, you know? They have nothing to lose, so maybe they're spies. So the king eventually sends out a small group of people that go out with these horses and eventually find out. And just like Elisha said, the following day, in the morning in the Shuk, what happens? Lechem b'shekel. Bread was one shekel, right? And that shalish, that messenger that said, oh, even if Hashem opens up the windows, this will never happen. And Elisha says to him, look what I told you. What I told you is you're not going to eat from it. And really that messenger throughout all this story is trampled because the people come and they just totally loot the camp of Aram. Beautiful story. What's the message of the story? So the story continues. I saw this in an article that I read by Rav Aaron Soloveitchik a number of years ago, and the message hasn't left me since. And every year that we come to around this time period, I remember the strong words that he said. And this year, uniquely, I found a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful song which describes this, an Israeli song. In 1927, there was this girl who wrote this song. Her name was Rachel Bluestein. Rachel Bluestein was living in Eretz Yisrael, and she was part of one of the political parties over there. And there was a sichsuch between two political parties. They were both secular. One was with Trumpeldor, one was not with Trumpeldor. And so that's the background that you need to know for this song. And if you just pay attention to the words of the song, they're so beautiful, and they describe what happened in our story, and they describe what her feelings of this story is. B'shekfar ha'yamim ha'oyev hanora b'shomron hevi b'matzor. They brought Shomron into a matzor. Arba mitzoraim la bisru b'sara. These four lepers came and gave a message, gave a light of hope. They spoke about a redemption. Something changed drastically. But everyone's inside and everyone's hungry and everyone's in disbelief. But I don't believe. I'm sitting inside of Shomron and I won't accept a redemption from a low leper, from the person who because of his lashon hara and because of the averos that he did, he's on the outs. He's going to come and tell me that Geula came. Are you crazy? Are you out of your mind? I'm not going to accept that. Hatahor yivaser v'gaal hatahor. Who's going to bring a redemption? Only the tahor, right? A tzaddik is going to come and stand up and say. The navi is going to come and say no. This is Geula. It's not going to come from these Mitzrayim. And if it comes from these Mitzrayim, I'm not going to accept it. HaTahor Yivaser V'gal HaTor V'yim Yado Lo Timtze Ligol. And if the Tahor doesn't show up, Az Nivchar Li Limpol Me Mitzukat HaMatzor. Az Nivchar Li Limpol Me Mitzukat HaMatzor, I'll decide on my own that I will succumb to my famine. Or Liyom B'Sorah HaGadol. What she's describing here, and it's so powerful, is that she's not willing to accept a redemption if it's not coming from a pure place. And it's starting to remind me, and it's very interesting because she's this secular woman. Now, what was the political background to this? She wasn't speaking about Ge'ula in context of Am Yisrael, but she was speaking about some sort of political rival that she had, and that if the law came through him, so I'm not going to accept it. And she used this parak in Tanakh to sort of magically tie together this beautiful poem. But there's something so deep in her words, right? If I were to have read this poem, and this is a point that Rav Gans made, if I were to have read this poem, who wrote this poem? It sounds like an anti-Zionist poem. It sounds like Rav Ochanan Wasserman maybe wrote this poem. It sounds like maybe the Satmar Rebbe wrote this poem. Because people are not ready to accept, right? We see it clearly. The king doesn't believe. Why doesn't he believe? Why don't the people believe? It's here. You can see it. Even when they get there, they're in total disbelief. And this woman even just makes it even stronger. She says, even if I see it, I won't accept it because it can't be. It can't be that such a ge'ula, such a redemption is going to come from such a place. And I think the message of why the Gemara in so many places calls Mashiach, a Metzora, is for this exact point. We've spoken about this a number of times, that our ideal vision of what Mashiach is going to look like, or what a redemption is going to look like from this Golus, or a redemption from the reality that we're in right now, it doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that, and Chazal even are telling us that it's not only not going to work like that, it's Dafka not going to work like that. It's going to come from someone that seemingly on the outside is filled with tzaras. And we know the famous words of the Alter Rebbe. The Alter Rebbe believes that a mitzora specifically happens to be someone who's on a high spiritual level. And therefore, only a person who's on a high spiritual level will have the hashgacha pratis in order to show him tzaras. Because if a person's speaking Lashon Hara all day long, there's no point in showing him a sign. He knows, right? So only someone on a spiritual high level is going to get tzaras. So what's the beautiful message that we find from this parak in Tanakh? Is that Mashiach and Ge'ula is not going to always come like we want it to, right? We wake up in the morning and we imagine that Mashiach is going to come in one. It doesn't work like that. And I think that's what Chazal is trying to tell us. I want to show you just a piece of an article that I read, and then I'd like to try to develop this just for a few more minutes, in a piece in the Orach Chaim that I found this week on the Parsha. Arbat hamitzorim hem anshei b'surat hageula l'toshvei hashomron. Hanitunim berav al safach hidalon. These lepers, and that's why I call the holy lepers, come, and these people are al saf hayeyush. They're ready to give up. Hamitzorim einam doagim atzmam. And we find that these lepers aren't only looking out for themselves. Bebchinat et nafshi yitzalti. That I'm just going to save myself. Hem af lo osim cheshbon al im achem shegarshu osam michutz la'ir. They were kicked out of the city. They could say, hey, forget about them. They don't take vengeance against them. Hamitzoreim and me'enamit ma'amim hem mevinim sheno adlam tafkid history mashmuti. They realize that we are put on the outside for a reason. We're here for a reason, right? A historical reason. Shel mivasrei hageula, right? That we are going to be the messengers of the geula. Hayeshua hatikva v'atkumala Am Yisrael hanatun b'matzor b'shomron. Right? Hamitzorayim, these lepers which have become so far from Hashem, hofchim liot shlichei hanavi Elisha. They become the shluchim of the Navi. They become the shluchim of Hashem. Look what else he writes over here in the third paragraph. Parshat mitzora v'haftarata. Nisan Chodesh HaGeula. We know Nisan and Iyar is the Chodesh of Geula. Mitzivot lanu mar'el b'surat HaGeula v'atzionut. These parshios tell us something very, very deep about the process of Geula. and the process of when a person looks at Yom HaTzmaut that's coming up, and a person may ask himself, is this really it? Is this really it? The country, the biggest taina is that the country came from such a tame place. It can't be Geula. It's exactly what Miriam Bershkin is speaking about in her song. It's exactly what Rav Wasserman is speaking about. It's exactly what the Satmar Rebbe is speaking about. But it seems in the Tanakh and in Chazal that Dafka the Mitzorayim are the Mivasra Geula, right? Right, mitzvot lanu maral b'surat ha'gula v'atzinut shenosa heim anshei ha'mitpasim kemitzorayim. It seems that the ones who are bringing the geula, they're mitzorayim. They look tamei. Shekein anu notim liros v'litfos rak et chitzimiyoto shel ha'mitzora. We always look on the external aspects of the mitzora. Anoroim es hanega hachitzoni. We see on the external point. But throughout the year and throughout the times that we've been learning Rav Kook, we spoke about Ma'amar Hador. We spoke about the concept of recognizing that there's something very, very deep in these people, that they have idealism. And this idealism comes from the shorish of their neshama. Even if they don't see it, for sure we don't see it, for sure they don't see it. But there's something Hashem is pushing them. I didn't see this written anywhere, but... And I'm not even sure that this is what the Or HaChaim means. But I think just to finish with this, there's a piece here in the Or HaChaim that I just happen to be, I don't usually learn Or HaChaim on the Seder or the Parshios, but someone said you should check out this Or HaChaim. The Or HaChaim in Parshas Mitzora, when speaking about really next week's Parshas, or it's this week's Parshas, double Parsha, right? When speaking about the process of Tahara of the Mitzora. So, are you guys familiar with how the Mitzorah becomes Tahor? He takes two birds and he kills one bird and he takes the other bird and he dips into blood. It's a very odd, situation. And the Or HaChaim has a very, very, very beautiful and very long piece. I only brought a small piece of it, in which he describes that there's something very deep here going on with these two tziporim, these two birds. It's very interesting that in the Zohar, when speaking about the Geula, we've seen this makor a number of times, that Dafka, in Sefer Yecheskel, it speaks about this as well, that Dafka, the Ofot Tmeim, the Ofot which are Tamei, they're the Mivasrei Geula also. They're going to chirp in the Geula, whatever that means. Right. So the Or HaChaim gives a little bit of insight to that, and I think it really connects to what we've said so far. He says, "Shtei tziporim chayos tehoros heim beis mishichim." When we learned the piece about Rav Kook when he spoke about Herzl in the Hesped B'Yushalayim, there's a famous Hesped for those who aren't familiar. There's a famous Hesped that Rav Kook wrote about Herzl, and over there he called him a Mashiach ben Yosef. Mashiach ben Yosef, that Mashiach ben Yosef has to come and create the guf, and sometimes it even seems that the guf is coming to do the exact opposite of what the neshama wants. And that's why Mashiach ben Yosef needs to be killed. So the Or HaChaim says in such a brilliant, brilliant way that these two tziporim, right, Ukmo shematzinu she'amru zal sheshnei mishichei Yisrael hei Mashiach ben Ephraim u'Mashiach ben David. Ubitchila Yizgala Mashiach ben Ephraim v'yamos. First Mashiach ben Ephraim, Mashiach ben Yosef is going to come and he's going to die. V'acharkach Yizgala Mashiach ben David. Ukenegdan Elu Beis Elu Amar v'lakach l'mitayr Beis Tziporim Chayos Toros. V'amar v'shachat kan remez laharigas Mashiach ben Ephraim. Says the Or HaChaim in a very, very deep way, and this is a little bit of a different, a little bit of a nuance from what we said. From what we said until now, is that dafka the mivasrei geula or dafka mitzorayim. The Or HaChaim takes a little bit of a different perspective on it, and once again, this I didn't see written anywhere, but I think that it's simple from his words. What the Or HaChaim understands is, Why do Chazal relate to the Mitzora as the Mivaser Geula? Why is it Dafka the Mitzora? So it could be, according to the Or HaChaim, what Chazal mean is that the Mitzora is the Mashiach ben Ephraim, the Mashiach ben Yosef. The Mashiach ben David, the Mashiach ben David, the Mashiach that we've all been thinking about, the Geula and the redemption that we've all been waiting for. And ever since we were young, we were told that it was going to come in such a miraculous way. I don't want to break your hearts. It could be that the end of the process of Geula, that's what it's going to look like. But until then, says the Or HaChaim, the first stage of the Metzora, the first stage of the Geula, Dafka comes through the Metzora. Dafka through someone who doesn't look exactly the way that we think about it. So just going forward, going from Mishoah Letkuma, like I posted on the group, that beautiful piece from Rav Gantz, that's the message that we need to take. The message is that over here, Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook, and this is why I think that this is Dako Rav Cook believed, is that a story that Rav Yoel ben Nun writes in this book that he speaks about Geula, and what this will finish. He says, Sipur nosaf yesh le mimo riva rabi, Rav Tzvi Yehuda. I was once by Rav Tzvi Yehuda's house. And he says that I was by Rav Tzvi Yehuda's house, and he had a number of pictures on his wall. A picture of, what does he say over here? From the Gra to Rav Kook, all these different Gdolim. And amongst them, there's this huge picture of Herzl. And Rav Yoel ben Nun says, like, I'm sorry to be like a little bit chutzpahdik, like Lahavdil, like, why are you hanging Herzl's picture like up with all of these Gdolim? You know, this guy was like a Rasha Marusha, and he really was. So Rav Tzvi Yehuda says back to him, and with this we'll finish. V'ulai, right? V'ulai ze lo motze chen b'inei mishu. Maybe it could be that you don't like the picture, you don't like the person. Aval oto shalach Hashem. But Hashem sent him. La'atchil lo tzi otanu me'agalut. That he began the process. It could be that we don't like that if Dafka comes through the Metzora. And that's what I think is pushing this Rachel lady, and what's pushing a lot of the other kihilos out there, which are very hesitant about understanding and receiving a geula from such a place. But I think it's a very deep idea that we have to contemplate going forward towards Yom HaTzmaut. Not sure if we're going to have a shir next week, considering it's Erev Yom HaZikaron. Could be that we're going to have some other programming, but it really was really good seeing all of you guys. It doesn't feel real, I'll be honest. It doesn't feel real that like we're not going to have a normal Kaitzman. And I'm sure you guys are feeling that also. So it's really nice to see your faces. I wish I could give you all guys a hug and a warm Zman Tov, but we'll have to be mistapek with just a video chat. So, L'chaim, guys. Shvi zocha to recognize the Mitzora, the holy lepers. L'chaim, L'chaim, guys.
Thank you, Rabbi.
All right, guys. Have a great, great evening. Yeah.
Quick question. I was just wondering.
Yeah, sure. No one has to stay. We're just smoozing. Yeah.
I just wanted to know, why is it that they called Rav Kook a Rasha? Like, what is it that made them call him that?
Well, I think it has to do with this Nekuda. It has to do with a number of Nekudas, but I think it all has to do, it all surrounds this concept of it doesn't seem like Geula should come this way. It doesn't seem like that. But the simanim are showing us differently. You know, there's a famous sentence in the Gemara which comes up a number of times where Tanayim are arguing about a svara and for a makor of a halacha, and one says, "Oh, I have a makor for this," and he quotes him a pasuk, and he says, "I don't need a makor for it, right? Lama likras svarahi." It makes sense. You know, you have a brain. It's very hard to look at the reality, what's going on in the last 70 years, and not recognize that we're 6 feet deep into this Geula process, and nothing's going to stop it. So you can either get on the train or wait to be waken up. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
It's good to see you, Noah, and I'm looking forward to learning. Okay.
Sounds awesome. I can't wait. All right.
All right. See you later.
Bye.